Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, you guys, welcome to another edition of the Temple of Hoop podcast. I am your co-host, Coach Maples, aka J Mapes, here with Kings and Jordan. Lakers falling down 0-2, first time in the playoffs. But definitely gonna get in a lot that's going on in this series, a lot going into it. We are joined by a special guest, friend of the pod, been on a few times, love him every time. You know him as V Kill Him on the timeline. Vinay, my guy, what's going on, baby?
I'm always honored to be part of the Temple of Hoop podcast. Happy to be back here again this season to talk about all the nonsense that's going on with the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals right now, man.
Perfect segue. First of all, before I get into it, Kings, Jordan, how y'all doing tonight, man?
Doing solid, man.
So, as Vinay alluded, Lakers fall down 0-2 to the Denver Nuggets, the number one seed, the Nuggets, 108-103. Jamal Murray had a terrible first half, was 3-for-13, finishes 11-for-24, so 8-for-11 in the second half, 6-for-14 from three, 37 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals. Jokic, a ho-hum 23-17-12 by his standards, which is amazing given the guy, given the way that he's playing. 10 from Aaron Gordon, 16 from MPJ, 12 from Bruce Brown, plus 16 Bruce Brown. Big minutes from him. On the Lakers side, a rough night for Anthony Davis offensively, 4-for-15. Did get to the line a lot, 9-for-11 pitches, 8-for-14. Ron James, 9-for-19, three-pointer continues to not fall for him, 0-for-6 tonight, 22-10, and 10 assists, 9 rebounds, missed a couple bunnies. Obviously, was going to try to rock the cradle on that dub before he threw it out of bounds. Austin Reeves, another stellar game. Definitely getting him some money. On the other end, D'Angelo Russell's probably cost himself a lot of money. 3-for-8, 10 points, 5 assists. Bad defense, 33 minutes, minus 16. D'Lo's up to minus 41 in both games of this series. Rui was special, 30 minutes, 21 points. Man, a lot to unpack here. Obviously, we'll go with the guests first, as we will. Vinay, just your thoughts on game two in general, and then we'll start from there. Man, go ahead, get us going.
Yeah, so I thought, you know, a lot of the stuff after game one was all the talk about adjustments, and we know what Mike Malone's been saying, like, just talking afterwards. But, you know, I thought the adjustments that the Lakers did defensively for Jokic specifically to try and neutralize some of the stuff that he was doing, getting up the floor really fast, you know, getting wide open looks for his teammates. I thought they did a good job on Jokic game plan wise this game. Like early on in the game, they were stealing a lot of his passes when he was trying to do that thing where he drives and he kind of last second tries to throw that pass out to a teammate or something like that. They've been blowing up Aaron Gordon, all those lobs that are supposed to go to Aaron Gordon, those are not,
yeah,
they
yeah.
haven't been happening this year. Like they've been ready for all of them. Like I honestly thought there was a point in this game where Lakers effectively played Gordon off the floor. Like that start of the fourth kind of seemed like he wasn't going to be in the game. And then they build out the lead and they bring him back in. So I thought the game plan was good, but that fourth quarter, man, they just let go of the rope defensively. And then they just started, I don't know what it is with this team, bro. Like they do the exact opposite of whatever's on the floor. So when they see a team with no center on the floor, for some reason in their minds, they're like, oh, I got to shoot jump shots. And it's like nobody goes to the rim, and it's just, I don't understand where that misunderstanding or misinterpretation is happening. So I don't know. I thought that's basically what cost us that fourth quarter stretch,
right,
where they just kept chucking jumpers.
Yeah, I felt like they had control of the game. Like they were up 10, and then you know, I'll get this later. That end of the third quarter, that decision making with the rush shot that led to the tip. Like, you know, that felt like an inflection point in the game, really. Kings, your thoughts about, you know, just how game two went?
I mean, had control of the game and then gave it away. It was just too much Dennis minutes. He was too tired. Should have seen more, tried more Lonnie for more two-way play. He can hit ju the jumpers and give spacing. It's just tough because like it's just it's, there are specialists. I mean, it's
Definitely
like
gonna talk about that.
yeah, D'Lo just can't. I mean, if D'Lo doesn't, he's not playing well offensively. He can't play. Like he's just that simple. He can't play. I mean, Vando, he as good as people keep saying about his defense on Murray, and mind you, Vando only played 16 minutes,
17, yeah.
16 minutes total. So the minute the Murray defense in the first half wasn't just Vando. I mean, Dennis had a lot of good minutes in the first half, but Dennis got tired and Murray started going off, and then Vando, you can't win his minutes, bro. Like you just can't win his minutes. Like you can't keep asking for a guy who can't you can't win his minutes, bro. So, I mean, it's a
And King
tough
has been
season.
saying this all season too, for the record, since the trade, because he's a Timberwolves. He's been saying this all season already.
I watched it, bro. Like he's great. I love his energy. I love how he competes, but it comes the time to playoffs, you just can't play him, bro. Like you can't play him because you can't score. No, you'll get stops, but you won't score, and then eventually the other team will hit. Like, you can't play like that, bro. Like it's not a winning formula.
Jordan, full disclosure, Renee, we tell everybody who comes on, Kings had Lakers in six. Jordan had Nuggets in six. Was it Jordan?
Seven.
Seven. And I had Nuggets in seven. That was our picks before. So that was just so
Wait,
you know.
you had Nuggets at seven also?
Yeah, I picked Nuggets in seven.
Oh man, that's the Pelican side of you.
No, I just, dude, the series, like, no, but if you like, if all season though, if you listen,
That's fair.
ask Jordan all season, I've been saying Denver's like, so it's like it's not just a new thing.
I get it. We can. It's not Temple of Lakers. It's Temple of Bulls. We gotta keep it objective.
Right.
I picked the Lakers in six, and the only thing I said when we did our pod with Raj, like the only thing I said is I could definitely see this series compared to the other ones being ones where through the first four games, the home team just won their games, and then the five game five was like the pivotal game.
Me and Jordan said it wouldn't shock if it's, the home team won every game. It's like it went that way. Jordan, just your thoughts about game two as a guy who picked the Nuggets comfortably.
Yeah, I mean, I like through the three quarters, I was like, man, this is all bad for the Nuggets, too. Like, they lose this game, they're losing the series, you know? And then
I think so. I thought so too.
Jamal Murray did his best Jason Tatum game six impression. He just woke up in the fourth quarter and just took over. And that was really the difference in the game. And like, we could sit here and say, like, yeah, the Lakers gave away the game. But at the same time, like, the Nuggets tried to give it back at the end. They made so many dumb turnovers at the end. Like, that should have been a 10
Two
point.
games in a row.
Yeah, two games, exactly, two games in a row. Like, that should have been a 10-point game, and they only won by five. And then there were some questionable things with the Lakers down at the end. Also, LeBron missed that layup. He looked tired in the fourth quarter. Like, he just
Ooh, yeah, we
he
got to
was
talk about
gassed.
that.
He looked leg gassed at absolutely.
Look gassed.
But you know what was part of my handicap in this series? I was like, yo, the altitude is going to catch up to the Lakers in Denver, right? And it has in both games. We've seen it. They just exerted a ton of energy, and the first game it was all in the second half. This game it was all in the first three quarters, and in the fourth quarter they just were like they had nothing left in the tank, dude. And that's when the Nuggets really kind of took over, took it to them. You can look at this two different ways. Like I thought the Lakers did a lot of good things in this game going forward, but I also thought like in the hindsight, like, you know, Jokic had a terrible game and they still won. And again, like you said, Maples, like a terrible game for Jokic was 23, 17, and 12. You know what I mean? But
Yeah, I mean, I'll let you continue. My slight pushback to that is I thought the Lakers did things to make him a lot less effective than last. So like, I think that dial goes both ways. Some of it was what the Lakers did do. So that's all I just,
I thought he was really passive, man. Like, I thought he second guessed a lot of shots. Like, there was a ton of shots where he took a pump fake and thought about it, and then he shot it. And like he just, I don't know. I've never seen Jokic play like that, really, and it kind of surprised me. But again, man, Jamal Murray, like, he has to be big, dude. If he's not big in the series, like the Nuggets stand no chance. I don't expect the Nuggets to go into the LA crypto or whatever they call that arena now. I don't expect Michael Porter Jr. to play good in there. I definitely don't expect KCP to play well, and I don't expect Bruce Brown to play as well. But I did tell y'all, Bruce Brown needed to play more minutes last game. He did, and Huge. He was very effective, man.
Yeah, my takeaway is I thought if you felt good about the Lakers after game one, I think you feel not bad about this, but a little bit disappointed that they couldn't.
Yeah.
I thought they were in control of this game. 48 minutes, probably, I'd say 33 of them, they were in control of this game. It felt like whenever they got that lead up to 8-10, they just do something so stupid.
Yeah.
And then the transition defense for the Lakers was just abhorrent.
Yep.
A hideous all game. In the half court, I thought they were extremely stingy. They made Joker work. He's one of the best passers in the league. They forced him into some very uncharacteristic turnovers. I thought the Lakers were very good on that end. In transition, it's just their switch from offense to defense is so slow. And it's two things to me. One, somebody's falling down after taking a shot. Sometimes they're fouls, they don't call. Sometimes the guys are flopping. It's whatever. It's other thing is, you know, they complain to the refs while Endeavor's playing basketball. Like, get up and get back on defense. You know, I think Endeavor got every time they got a stop against the Lakers, they got an open three.
Yep.
You know, it's just very frustrating to watch the bad transition defense. The Joker is, like I said, Joker's many things. Fast is not one of them. If he's running point and blasting the ball up, he shouldn't be beating three Lakers up the court and finding an open guy on running the wing for a 3-point. It was just very frustrating to watch the Lakers defensively in transition. I thought in the half court they were great. My other observation, they have to get better offensive play from a guard outside of Austin Reaves.
Yeah, they're getting nothing from the backcourt, man.
I think Dennis is going to be up and down offensively. I think we've acknowledged that. Defensively, he gives you things. But I need another guard, and that's supposed to be D'Lo's job. He's supposed to be the quote-unquote third guy, even though I think we can all objectively say Reaves is the Lakers' third best player. Mm-hmm. I think we can just say that. But we need something from D'Lo. You know, when he's on, he's a very good shot maker. Very good passer, play initiator. Like when he's on, this team is different when he's on. And they're going to need that in the next, five games of the series if it goes seven. I don't know if they win four in a row. If they win, I think it's going to have to be in seven. So things I've noticed, Lakers got very bad guard play, very bad transition defense. They did defend Joker a lot better, and just they need a better offensive game from Anthony Davis. Defensively, he's going to be solid. I even think he ran out of gas defensively tonight. A couple of uncharacteristic defensive plays. Usually he's very good about reading shot clock. I thought it was a top of the key three. Shot clock going down, doesn't press up on Murray. Murray gets the clean step back. Usually AD's really alert about where the shot clock is defensively and can get a harder contest on that. Just stuff like that, that to Jordan's point, probably lends itself to fatigue and just – you know, you could see a couple of the close-up shots of LeBron James turning his ankle. You know, the foot's aggravated, and then he was just obviously gassed. To his credit, 38-year-old man did a great job guarding probably the best offensive player in basketball, but it took a toll. Like, this Joker leaning on you for quarters at a time, and then you got to be a 25-point guy on the other end. Just, you know, at some point the body just gives. And I thought that led to him taking some of those threes where he was just settling. And, of course, Jordan mentioned the Denver air isn't really helping with the altitude, with the fatigue situation. Am I correct in saying this series is every other night, right, regardless?
Yeah.
That's crazy given the time zone. The time zone change, that's crazy.
I mean, that's what happened. Like they wanted to play, NBA players want to get rid of all the back-to-backs, and they were complaining about load management and all that sort of stuff. So they got to make up the game some other way. So it's every other game. The other thing I was going to say is it's not even just the offensive production. Like we're not like Reeves is doing his thing, but like D'Lo and Dennis, like we know Dennis is kind of a specialist. He's not necessarily a guy that's like a two-way guy. Like you expect him to go put up 15, 20 and lock up the other guy. And I mean, to some degree, D'Lo is the opposite. He's the guy that you expect to put up hopefully 15 to 20, but you don't expect it. But the problem is my thing with D'Lo is it doesn't show, he's not like showing pride. Like, you're not like taking offense to the fact that like they want to get you out of your game. You know what I mean? Like you're not even trying to force it. Like, you're just like, all right, you know what? It's not my night. Let me go to somebody else. And like, for me, like when I watch Austin, like Austin will try and flop. He'll do anything he can to try and put points on the board. And like, even if he's not getting the calls, like he's still trying to do something. And like, that's what you want to see out of those guys, right? Like, right. Dennis isn't scoring, but I can see Dennis scrap on defense. I can see him running through screens. I can see him fighting with Murray as best as he can and stuff. So it's just like, we need to see some pride out of some of these, you know, out of somebody, a guard outside of Reeves. Like, you gotta take some of this personal, because Bruce Brown's just coming down the floor like a single man fast break and going right through people's chests and taking layups at the rim. It's like, all right, we're just not gonna defend him. Like, what's going on here?
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, the guard play, I think that's a huge issue. Because
real quick, do you guys think that Ham goes to Malik Beasley at all in game three?
Well, I don't think the issue was offensive, so I don't think so. The issue was, well, fourth quarter was offensive. They just stopped defending the 3-point line and got lazy on the screens. But I don't know if they called Beasley's name in series. It's a possibility. Ham is no, if his fatigue, he had no problem pulling Lonnie out of the woodwork against the Warriors. So you know, I'm not gonna put anything past that, but. You know, that's a fine segue. Let's talk about, you know, Darvin Ham catches a lot of flack, whether justly or unjustly, depending on how the game went. He caught a lot of flack tonight. A lot of people pushed for Rui to start. I know the big thing was, you know, Draymond Green came out and was like, start Vando. I think some of that was like, you know, Draymond kind of seeing himself. And I just leave it at that. But, I think Draymond's a great basketball mind. I agree with a lot of what he says. I don't think past a certain part of the series, you can play a one-way guy. I think it's very tough to do that, especially when it's offensive, and especially when AD is not shooting it well. So I think everything becomes magnified on a shrunken floor. That's kind of where I was stuck. But what were your thoughts on just the Lakers rotations, Darvin Ham, Kings? What do you think about? I know Darvin got kind of you know, it was back to, you know, he stinks night. So,
I mean, there were some bad rotations. And that he should, the Vandal starting thing is, it's not going to work.
All three of us did say Rui. In the pot before.
Rui starting is the obvious choice here. He made some bad errors, but honestly, I mean, it's hard too because like people also want to get on Brown, but Brown is guarding was trying to guard Jokic himself too. So it's like if you're a defensive player of the year, you're the best defender in the world who plays the five, can't match up with his man, and the 38-year-old got to do it. I mean. I, you know, it's like some things like where Vinay's like, you gotta take pride. I mean, AD had a great game one, but he gotta take pride too, bro.
Yeah,
like,
I agree. Yeah,
you have to take pride. You can get on Ham. They make them take those bad shots. You know, what I mean, Ham. He overplayed Dennis. I agree. And then when you overplay Dennis, he starts to lose his steam defensively. He starts to not be as aggressive offensively. He should have played Lonnie more. But I mean. You know, that's the stuff I'll critique him on in terms of what I think he could have did better. But he's in a tough spot, you know what I mean? Because there's obviously some positives coming to play, and then his stars didn't show up offensively, so it's hard. I mean, there's a lot of people critiquing him, but they're saying they should play Vando more, and then they want LeBron James to crash the rim. So a lot of people who are critiquing him don't even know what they're talking about. So like, it's not even worth entertaining. But in terms of the simple things, like he needs to start Rui. Their best lineup is Dennis, Rui, Reeves, AD, Bron. Been dominant this series, but you have to watch how many minutes that lineup plays. You don't want to overuse Dennis. You have to lean heavy on Rui and Reeves. And I think you have to throw Lonnie some more minutes there. And you might have to play TBJ. Brown. If D'Lo can't go, you have to play TBJ because TBJ, he's big. He can defend and he can't hit threes. So you might have to bring him out off the bench going forward.
He was in the rotation. So the Lakers beat the Nuggets twice in the regular season, if you put any stock in regular season wins. And Russ was on the team at the time. We started Pat and Dennis. That was our starting backcourt at the time. Russ came off the bench. I think Reeves came off the bench with him. And the reason why those teams won those games, if you guys remember or watched them, like Russ was just going at the rim nonstop. Dennis was going at the rim nonstop. There was more balance in terms of that. And TBJ was part of those lineups. Like he was the floor spacer, the size to help them out. And he was strictly a catch and shoot guy. He wasn't a guy you were looking for to do it. So it's like, I think he's been trying, like obviously Rui's been phenomenal coming off the bench. Like he's been that Kendrick Nutt. Like I understand why Tommy Shepard got fired from the Wizards. Okay. Aside from everything that happened before that, like that had to be the nail in the coffin after Rui had his game one against Memphis. But like Rui's been phenomenal. I agree with Kings. Like, I actually originally thought if game one, we would have gone back to our original lineup with Vando. And then if that didn't work in game one, we would have gone to like moving Rui into the starting lineup.
Right.
This game two, but obviously you own Dennis. So I wouldn't be surprised if it happens. The only issue now happens is it becomes much more political now. Because if Dennis is in the starting lineup to balance out the fact that you're putting Rui in for Vando and you're trying to keep it where like who comes out, you can't take Reeves out of the starting lineup. Like Reeves has been playing way too well, and they're actually running the offense through him at the start of games. Like Reeves is taking like 7 shots today before LeBron had 2. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like they trust him to hoop. So
well, the thing about Reeves, he's a great at attacking a closeout off somebody else's gravity, and he's a great decision maker on the fly as far as his passing. You saw that night. He creates a lot for guys too. So I think just a glove and a hand fit. I'm with you because I heard some guys talk about this, and you would think it's not an issue, but it simply is. The Lakers are worried about losing D'Lo because at some point it becomes $30 million unused, and you just don't get the $30 million back when you're over the cap. Mm-hmm. And that's what the issue is. So, like, you don't want to completely lose him.
But, I mean, at this point, based on what he's done, who's giving him that? Who's taking him
on that? And that's the other side. That's the other side of it. You're approaching that point now where it doesn't really matter at that point because – he's playing himself out of getting anywhere near that. And I think, you know, I think I'm not saying you bench him, but he's got to have a very quick hook in game three because that season on the line at that point, it can't be, you can't wait for him to go like 33 minutes to play like he did tonight. You can't do it.
But I also think the Lakers to win this series, D'Lo has to produce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's there. He's one of the things that has to flip. Absolutely. They need another. I've said it. Vinay said it. King said they need another guard to step up offensively and be good for 15 to 20 points a game.
Yeah, you're getting extraordinary production out of Reeves. That's why you're in these games to begin with, like from him in the starting lineup. So it's just the other thing is I don't like, and this is not a slide on Ham. I don't know if Ham can adjust to taking two guys out of the starting lineup and know what that backside rotation is going to be. Like if you say, D'Lo's like, don't worry about it. I'm a team player. I'm going to come off the bench.
Right.
And Vando goes to the bench. You play Rui. You play Dennis. And now you have a nice offense-defense balance. Rui's on the floor. You've got the size that you want. But now you're bringing D'Lo off the bench. You're bringing Vando off the bench. So now that small ball center that you had with Rui and LeBron, that rotation changes now because Rui's playing with the starters. So how do you stagger the minutes? Like I feel like it's just too much for Ham to do. So it's probably just Rui getting put into the starting lineup. And then he's just going to try and figure out how to fit in Vando, you know, maybe in spot minutes to play defense or something like that in certain lineups. I don't know if they'll go all the way. They'll take D'Lo out of the starting lineup too as well, because that just may be too much.
Good point. I want to talk about a big thing. We've all glossed over it. Let's get into it. LeBron's fatigue factor here. I thought Kings raised a great point. You know, strategically, it might be working in stretches, but you can obviously see Bron being burnt out. You know, he's probably the most durable athlete in NBA history, but even at 38, you know, he's got some limits. I thought Kings raised a great point saying, AD, you know, we pined for this Defensive Player of the Year award for him. You may want him to roam, but it's costing you on some other things. When you have to put LeBron on Joker, he may have to come to a point this series where he has to sack up and just, I got 15. I'll do my best. We can't let these other guys get off. And again, Nuggets, 5-6 guys in double figures. I don't know if the Lakers can win that series if that, you know, that sustains. I thought even like Phoenix, the two games they won, you know, Joker did his damage. You know, nobody else got off. You know what I mean? I think that's a blueprint. I think the Lakers have more than better personnel than Phoenix defensively to make that happen. So what are your thoughts about LeBron guarding Joker and then that affecting him? And then do you think AD eventually has to get back on Joker and take that responsibility as the series goes on? Just what do you think about that? I'll start with you, Jordan.
And my only thing is, like, LeBron's been so disengaged off the ball defensively. Like, we've seen so many back cuts and back screens just get wide open layups that, like, when LeBron was guarding Joker, he was engaged in defense, you know what I mean? So, I don't know, dude. Like, I do think that the Lakers' best defensive game plan is taking AD off Joker, to be honest. Like, it's worked, you know what I mean? And, like, they just have to figure out how to stagger the minutes and figure that out. Like, I totally expect like them to play a lot better at home with the home energy and the crowd and stuff. Like, dude, playing in Mile High is no joke, dude. Like, I know you guys wanted to disagree, but it's like there's a reason why the Nuggets are undefeated at home.
And no, playoffs. I was with you on that. That's hard up there. Every NBA player says when you first get up there, like it's different. You have to. It takes a while to adjust.
So I think the Lakers are good. They just have to figure out like how to steal one on the road. They just got to steal one on the road. Take care of home court and steal Game 5 or Game 7 on the road. Just figure it out. You know what I mean? Like, you had control of the game tonight. You ran out of gas. We all saw it. Like, it wasn't a schematic issue, in my opinion. It was just like, it was just total effort. It was gone, dude. They had no legs. So they just got to kind of, figure it out, man. Like, I think the schematic issue, I think Ham has made the adjustments he's had to make, and they've worked.
Yeah.
They're going to go home. I'm telling you, D'Lo's scoring 25 in Game 3. Bro.
If D'Lo plays well, like, what can Ham do if the guys he played don't play well? What can he do? Schematically, he's been fine. What can he do if guys aren't playing well?
I think your stars can't to win in the playoffs on the road. You have to, your stars got to generally like 90% of the time on the road, your stars have to carry you on the road. That's why I'm not concerned. Like, I think they'll be fine at home. The role players are going to play better at home. But on the road to win, your stars got to show up. And, you know, history shows us this is an anomaly, the game that AD and Brian, they very rarely play this bad together.
Yeah. Yep.
So it's an anomaly, but you know, we'll see how it goes.
I did mean to say earlier is like, you know, you barely lost the game. Right. And AD and LeBron both played bad. I mean, that to me is more positive going forward than Game 1 when AD and LeBron played lights out. They exerted a ton of energy and they still lost. Like, now I'm like, okay, we definitely have an opportunity to win a road game here.
All right. So to be fair, I do want to look at this from the Denver side too, but just like I thought the Lakers did some things to make Joker a little, you know, so he didn't run wild like he did in Game 1. I thought Denver also did some things in Game 2. They were really struggling with the Lakers pick and roll in the first, I think, quarter and a half or quarter and three quarters, almost up until halftime. Even it's a little bit into the third quarter. Malone goes to a super deep drop and just says, "Forget it. I'm going to just, they can have the jump shots. I'm going to stop giving them the paint." I think that started to stagnate the Lakers offense, especially when found out AD had nothing going jump shot wise. And on top of that, D'Lo, who's supposed to be one of their better shooters, he couldn't make anything. And then LeBron just having 3-point troubles all playoffs. He just has no foundation with the shot with the foot. I think that's the the foundation of it all. So that was a big adjustment that I saw. They went into a much deeper drop to just basically sell out and take the paint away. And the Lakers were going to hit jump shots. They were just going to shake their hand tonight. I think that was kind of the Denver's, you know, thought process. So I do want to give Denver some credit on the adjustments they made as well. I think they also have some movement, better movement when they had the, you know, Rui or LeBron on Joker. They were able to generate a lot of, you know, three-point looks off the ball based on that. The thing that the Lakers are doing that is absolutely pissing me off is, you know, he's the best passer in the NBA from the center position, and you double strong side off a plus shooter right in front of his face. It's an easy three-point shot every time. It's every single time they've done it. The process is broken. So even if they miss, I don't even count it as a stop. You're giving KCP, Jamal Murray, Michael Porter Jr. wide open three-point shots off an easy read for a great passer. And that's like I get so upset every time they defend the post that way. That's the of all the things that the Lakers do in the half court, that's very good. That's the dumbest thing they do. I think that's got to change. They've probably given up 9 to 12 points off threes just doing that. Yeah. Like that's got to change.
Yeah, I was gonna say one of the things I think that Denver did that even in the fourth or just throughout the game is, they at some point eventually matched the physicality of what the Lakers were doing. Like every time they went down 7-8 points, like their guys kind of got into the Lakers. And it wasn't that it was not only that they were schematically trying to encourage jump shooting, but with that drop, but at the same time, they were like, these are the only shots that we want to allow you to have. Like, so it wasn't like it was not like Bruce Brown was like playing off a guy so far. Like he was staying with them, but he's like, if you're going to shoot, you're going to have to take this jumper. Like there's a point, I think, in the game where I think Michael Porter Jr. hit a three to tie the game. And it was just basically a back and forth kind of just trading shots. And I think Lonnie hit a floater off of like attacking a closeout. And it was really, really good defense. Like I think it was Michael Porter Jr. that goes and closes out on him. And he actually closes out really well, which is kind of crazy because Michael Porter Jr. is not a good, like his closeouts are not good. Like he has his hips turned.
He's been great defensively in these playoffs. So.
Yeah. And Lonnie hit a super, super tough floater to give the Lakers a lead. But like when they started tightening up their like their closeouts and stuff like you can tell like when a defense starts closing out really good, that's when you know they're all on the string. Right. And that's when I thought like the momentum started going the other way. I was like, okay, this is about to turn into a shootout. So if the Lakers don't start getting buckets at the rim, they're going to be in trouble. And that's literally what happened. We started taking threes, missing them. And then Jamal, they hit like four threes in a row. Like it was like, Jamal, Michael, Jamal again, and yeah, and somebody else. I forgot who it was.
Brown, the corner, Brown.
Yeah. So.
Okay. So what? Lakers got to contain Murray somehow, but it's hard. You're giving so much attention to Joker. You got to just—it's hard to give two people that much attention. They've got to just
so bad the first three quarters, though, dude.
Yeah. I think that's what it was. He was so bad that he just became so good. I think he just. He threw the Lakers off.
Yeah,
it wasn't like a warm up. It went. Like, I've been terrible all game, and now I'm gonna play like Steph Curry in 2015.
Yeah, I think that, dude, it was like he couldn't miss in the fourth quarter. He was taking some tough shots too.
Yeah, Jokic went 0-for-4 in the fourth quarter. That was the other thing. So it was all Jamal. The whole quarter was Jamal.
Right. So what do you, Jordan, in Denver's mind? What are they thinking going to LA right now?
I mean, I think that they have home court advantage, right? So I in their minds, I'm thinking we still won on the road, the series is over, right? So I think we see a huge effort from Denver in game three. But on the flip side, I think we see a massive effort from the Lakers, obviously, right?
Well, you got down on three. I'm just sort of like, what is Denver's mindset here after, you know, getting two?
Well, I mean, if I'm thinking about Denver, like, yo, we didn't play our best game today. You know, Jamal Murray finally woke up in the fourth quarter. Like, if we get this Jamal Murray again continuously, we're going to be tough to beat. Michael Porter Jr., if he could play well on the road, Denver, I mean, they're deep, dude. Like, you have Michael Porter Jr., Jamal Murray, Jokic, right? You have three high-level offensive players, probably, aside from Boston, maybe the three best offensive players left in the playoffs on one team. So... I don't know, dude. Like, my thing with Denver is, like, I just don't think they're good enough defensively, and they're their role players struggle on the road. They did in Phoenix as well, except for game six when the series was kind of over and Devin Booker finally came back down to earth to be a human being. So I just think if they can go in and steal one in LA, this is going to be very difficult for the Lakers to come back and win. I think the Lakers definitely got to take care of home court. I do expect the Lakers role players to play a lot better. I do expect D'Lo to play a lot better. And if Joker has another game like they did today, it's going to be a blowout on Saturday.
Blowout. I think the Lakers are going to win. I don't know about a blowout. If anything, it might be comfortable. I think game four is the one, like, Denver may let up, but game four opportunity to go 3-1 and possibly closing out at home. I think that may be the one that you get the massive turn up from Denver for. That's kind of where, kind of how
opened,
I see.
The Lakers open -4 tonight. It's already at -5.
Oh, wow.
And people, bro, they're going to win. Bro, D'Lo's not going to play like this. Like, it's just what it is. Denver's role players are bad on the road. That's not going to magically change, bro.
Yeah.
The Lakers are a great home team. That's not going to change. It's going to go – we're going to go back to the key is Denver has home court. Denver has home court. They got the best home court in the league. Can the Lakers win one on the road? But we'll get to that first. We'll get to that later if it comes. What I
would say about that, though, is like Michael Porter Jr. is a good enough player to where he should be able to produce on the road. It's just whether he can or not. At some point, this guy's got to wake up and be like, yo, I'm 6'11", and I'm one of the best three-point shooters on the planet. When he does that, it's going to be nasty.
We'll see. Jordan, real quick before we get out of here, you guys shocked at all about Boston Miami? Real quick.
Nah, we kind of expected.
Didn't I tell you the Boston is winning 7 games? Like,
the Kings was like, Boston gonna find a way to get this to go 7. I think that's a
surprise, bro.
Boston's gonna win the next 4 in a row. They're such a better team, dude. Like, there's no way the Heat continue to shoot 54% from three, dude.
Everybody keeps saying that with Miami. Everyone keeps saying
I said it all first round.
They do it every series. They do it every series.
I don't know when you just have to give it up and be like, that's not going to happen. It's just not
going to
happen.
I'm not going to, dude. This is a team that shot 34%.
The only people they did that to was Kevin Durant and Kyrie, bro. They have not done that any other time. Got to give it up, bro.
Can't believe it, dude. It's it defies all logic, dude.
Real quick, Vinay, where can we find your stuff, bro?
You can find me. I mean, you can just follow me on Twitter, man. You can follow me at VKillum. I do the Lakers podcast with Raj at Lakers Detailed. You can follow that on Twitter. Can I give just one rant that I've been annoyed with
NBA Twitter about?
I just want to get one rant off. It's two rants, but I'm just gonna keep it to one. Okay. Like I said this on the pod the other day. After game one, everybody was talking about adjustments, and this is an NBA Twitter thing. And I made this joke the other day. I said NBA Twitter is the only place where 140 characters is more than enough to explain how a team's going to win a game based off of adjustments. And people tweet stuff out, and they go, "This is what they got to do. That's it. Done. That's all you got to do."
They literally are saying to play Vanderbilt, the guy that they are losing his minutes every time. They're saying he should play. Like, there's nothing to talk about. They don't know what they're watching, bro. Like, it's just, I don't know what else to say at this point.
And it's happening on both sides. This is high, like, honestly, some of the basketball was bad that we watched today, or in the series, but this is like high level basketball, right? Like, these coaches are not going into these series blind and acting like we're just pulling stuff out of a hat. So they're scheming and stuff like that. But when we talk about adjustments as basketball fans and we put down coaches, people need to understand that there's an execution part of this entire adjustment thing that you're talking about that has to actually happen. Yesterday, after game one, somebody said, the best way to counter trapping Jokic with Rui and AD is go tell Aaron Gordon to go screen for Michael Porter Jr. and set up wide open threes. They tried that today. They actually tried that to set up the three. LeBron was already standing in the spot where the ball was going to go. And I was just like, they can't run that. They have to do something else. So they had to shuffle the ball around. I think Gordon eventually got a layup at the rim because they left him open. They had to go back to him. But like, fans have got to stop like with this, like, oh, I tweeted out. That's it. Like Maples, that character from Mandalorian where he's like, I have spoken. And then like, it's done. It's like, no, man, this is not how it works. Like, there's a human element to basketball. So it's just like, just that, like, that stuff has to stop. Like, I know we're saying right now, like, hey, you gotta, maybe you gotta bench D'Lo, maybe you don't, but that doesn't mean we fix the solution. Like, yep. There's always a trade off when you make some sort of adjustment or some lineup change.
Yep. Trade off, great point. It's annoying
because, oh, go ahead, Jordan.
I was gonna say, Maple said last episode, like, fans don't actually understand, like, the amount of knowledge that coaches actually. They can go in and like change everything.
I'm gonna go off that point, Jordan. Jamal had a great point, bro. You think about how many players there are in the NBA, 400 something. There's only 30 head coaches in the NBA. There's a reason why when one guy goes, even though he was fell off short, and he goes, they hire another guy who came up short, because it's hard to get guys to buy in. It's hard to get the respect, and it's hard to know the X's and O's and knows what's going to execute in the flow of the game, bro. Like, this doesn't happen with football talk, bro. Like, you don't have – like, football fans have their own issues, but you don't have fans pretending like they know the film more than Bill Belichick, bro. Like, I don't know why these people come on Twitter. Like, bro, I'll critique a coach, but, you know, I'll always respect why a coach thought the way they did. I always say, you know, at the end of the day, he came up short, but – I mean, he has these issues compared to his peers, but like, I'm not gonna pretend and sit here like I know more than a coach. These fans on NBA Twitter were literally tweeting like, "Oh, we should coach." No, you should not coach, bro. You should not coach. You don't know what a horn set is, bro. Stop talking like you're an actual guru, bro. Like, bro, I know you know some of these people put gurus in their names and all this stuff. Like, you have NBA Twitters. Like, you have like NBA fan group. Like, I've seen those accounts like over 7 years. Different people pretending like they know it all, bro. We don't, bro. Like, we can comment what we think, but at the end of the day, these coaches have watched so much film. They spent hours in this craft. They've grinded for years, bro. Respect the coaches, bro. Like you can, like Paul always says, get on for the easy decision, sure, but stop acting like you're like a mastermind and you can coach better than this coach, bro. Like, do you have people really literally calling for Vandal minutes, and they're trying to call him an idiot, bro? I can't.
He's never gonna give up the van no minutes,
delusion, bro. You literally cannot talk to that delusion, bro. They got it, bro. Like, they got it.
Go ahead.
I just want to say, Maples made a great point during the Final Four or during the NCAA tournament, and he's a coach. He's like, yo, I've been watching the NCAA tournament. I just got a bunch of great ideas for offensive sets from watching the tournament, and he's a coach.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and coaches. Yeah. I think coaches, even at the NBA level, have said many times, like, I took this from another coach that I saw. He ran this play like 2 years ago, and it worked against us. So I was like, oh, let me just copy this play and run it against whatever team it is. It's just, yeah, that rant. I just wanted to say that part because I keep seeing it on the timeline, and it's not even just to defend the coaches. It's just like, you have to respect the game, man. Like they make adjustments. Like, Ham made nice adjustments. Malone made nice adjustments within the game, in between games. But those players also have to go out there and execute it. And
D'Lo has to make jump shots, bro.
Right.
Ham, like, can't make it for him.
Yeah. And that just part. And the other thing is this, too. Like, this last part is, this is not chess, right? Like, this is not like, I'm going to watch Kings move his rook to the corner, and I'm just going to stand there and just watch him do it. Like, this is not – basketball is not chess. These players are going to watch these adjustments happen in real time. Like, Bron, he was gassed. Like, what he was doing on the defensive end, this is credit to Bron at his age, he was blowing up a ton of plays, even not being part of the ball. And, like, that's how the game works. That's what's the beauty of the game on both ends, offense and defense.
All you'll hear about on NBA Twitter is him missing a layup and that dunk.
Right. Which, I mean, you know, you don't want him to miss. You don't want him, right. You know, it is what it is.
I mean, they don't know when a guy's blowing up an action, bro. When Denver's trying to get to their spots, and he's blowing up the read, and he's forcing, you know, bad reads, and he's forcing them out of their offense, and now they have to take a congested shot. Like, people who aren't coaches can't see that. They're not going to.
Yeah, they've made the AG Joker pick and roll ineffective.
Yeah, they've killed that action complete. Yeah. So now Malone's having to figure out how to use Gordon without even being able to use that. Yeah.
Right. So make sure you follow V Killer, like he said. Make sure you follow RIP Kings, bro. Make sure you follow Jordan Rules, TSP.
Yes, yes.
Make sure you follow myself, JJMaples55_MST. Vinay, once again, thank you, brother.
Of course.
Thank you for coming on the playoffs. Next episode will be recorded Sunday. We'll be talking about what happened in game three. Hopefully it will be 2-1. We can have a big game five to talk about, not 3-0 with the Lakers fighting for their lives. You guys be safe. Tap in with us. Keep tapping with us. Keep supporting the pod. And we are out of here.